For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
So, as I said, I've been here since 1983, and the fact that you guys are here in this room tells me two things about you. One, that you love the things that God loves, and you are passionate about the things that God is passionate about, and that is the lost for Christ, that you have a passion to be a part of that. Another thing I know about you is that you realize that God has chosen you as his instrument in order for that to happen. And that's something that we all have in common here, and that is really sweet. So thank you for placing yourself in that position to want to be used by God in this way. And so that's really cool that we have that in common. Hospitality. So I can't think of any better vehicle other than hospitality that so effectively draws people to Christ and yet is so that is so lacking in our culture. Okay? Let's just think about some statistics. I did a little research on this. I've done research on this before, but it's updated. A 2009 Duke University survey found that 25% of Americans report that they have no meaningful social support at all. I'm sure it's probably worse now that it's 2014. An AARP survey showed that 40% of adults surveyed said that they are lonely. They categorize themselves as being lonely. Socialskinny.com, I've never heard of that, but there is, of course, you know, a network about this. Socialskinny.com found that 40% of people spend more time socializing on the internet than they do face-to-face. And I think we can all agree that as this country ages, even though we are more connected electronically, we are less connected relationally. And I just have to share this with you. I was shocked when I saw this on TV. I don't even know what a nabby is, but when I saw that, and this is for children, you know, it's not just a tablet, it's a friend. And it talks to the kids, it interacts with them. It's like, this is what our, this is the flow of our culture right now. This is where we're at. We are in a culture that connects through social networking, not face-to-face. So it's really hard to overemphasize the importance of hospitality in our culture when we are so unconnected in our communities. And it's also hard to overemphasize it because it is so emphasized in the Bible. Both the Old and the New Testament, we see it all over. I love the stories about Abraham and Lot entertaining and showing hospitality to the angels that came to see them. Rahab showing hospitality to the spies while they were scoping the city out for God. There's many, you know, Elijah and the widow. I mean, it may not even use the word hospitality, but we see it all over the Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 10, verse 19. Great, great verse. This is Moses preparing the country, the nation, to go into the new land, right, for the second time. And he talks about hospitality there. He says, show love to foreigners, for you yourself was once a foreigner in a strange land, in Egypt. And this is repeated throughout the law in the Old Testament. So it's a big deal. And in the New Testament as well, it's huge. 1 Timothy 3 is actually where Paul tells Timothy, he lists the requirements for being an elder. And he lists hospitality even before he talks about being able to teach. I don't know if the order means anything. I kind of think it does, though. Being hospitable is huge to God. It's huge for us as leaders and workers in the body of Christ. So it's a big thing. And so, you know, we're faced with being in a culture that is increasingly isolated from each other, and we, the church, have the answer to that isolation. And hospitality is that link that brings the two together so that we can reach our lost neighbors for Christ. And so our goal today This is what I'm saying is my goal today for this workshop, is to equip you with a gospel-centered foundation and motivation to build a culture of biblical hospitality in your faith community to reach the lost for Christ. I realize that's a lot of words, but I think you get the meaning, okay? This is about just being equipped, really. That's the goal. So before we get into what hospitality is, let's talk about what it is not. I'm sure when you guys hear the word hospitality, a lot of things go through your mind, you know, namely good old Martha Stewart, you know, who can follow her? She's amazing. She's a great baker. She does all these cool things with her house. And then you have Better Homes and Gardens, where you think of these things, and that's the image that comes in your mind with hospitality. And it's just not so. You know, you're sitting here, you're thinking, I'm not a good cook. I don't speak well with people. I don't have a nice house. You know, I just don't fit that mold of hospitality. I'm here to say to you, good. That's a good thing, because hospitality is not about your house. It's not about your things. It's not about your talents. It's not about you at all. All right? Get that solid in your head. And it's not entertaining. Hospitality and entertaining are two different things. Think about it. What do you remember when you enter someone's home, maybe for the first time? What do you remember when you're there? Is it the place setting, you know, the flatware, the flowers on the table, the great meal you had? No. You remember how you felt. You remember how you were treated. You remember how they interacted with you in a way that made you feel comfortable. That's hospitality. It's not about your stuff. In fact, I have felt, and I can say this honestly, I have felt more welcome in people's homes of little means than I have in people's homes of great means. I mean, how many of you would feel comfortable being in Martha Stewart's home? I wouldn't. I would be afraid I'd break something. Yeah. So it's really not about the stuff. And it's also not just for the gifted. And this is a theme we're seeing throughout this conference. Just like Middleburg said yesterday, you know, we're not all gifted in evangelism, but we're all called to share our faith. Same is true with hospitality. All followers of Christ are commanded to show hospitality. 1 Peter 4:9 says, you know, be eager, show love to foreigners. Be eager to show hospitality, right? It's a command. And whatever God calls us to do, we know He gives us the resources and the power to do it. And that is a constant throughout our Christian life. He will always equip us to do what He calls us to do. So it's not just for the gifted, it's not about your stuff, and it's also not always in your own home. Okay, so, you know, one of the most impactful examples of hospitality is the Good Samaritan story. Here's the Samaritan going from, I think it's Jericho to Jerusalem or something like that, comes across an enemy, a Jewish man who's been beaten and left for dead. And the whole story is about how He showed him compassion. He met his needs. He took care of him. He showed him hospitality. He wasn't in his house, his mansion or his castle or whatever. He was on a road. So it's not just about being in your home. So those are some things it's not. Let me turn my page here. So what is hospitality? It comes from the word philoxena, or philoxenos, philoxenia. Comes in a couple different forms in the Greek. But philos in the Greek is friend. Xenia is stranger, which is where Xenos gets its funky name. We are a church that welcomes the stranger, the sojourner. And so literally, hospitality is making a stranger a friend. Okay, that's a really easy definition of hospitality. And so for our purposes today, we're going to work with this definition. Biblical hospitality, the readiness to warmly show generous compassion to strangers. Okay? So let's break this down a little bit, because there's a lot of in this little definition. Readiness. And this aspect of this definition gets to the indispensable point about hospitality, and that is that it's a lifestyle. It's not an event. It's not something you schedule, although it can be. Not solely something you schedule. It's a lifestyle. Every morning that you wake up and get out of bed is an opportunity to show hospitality to someone, to make a stranger a friend. Every single day you wake up, that is your opportunity. You will find it in the grocery store. You'll find it at work. You'll find it on the plane. I mean, we've been hearing stories. I mean, all these stories that Middleburg has been saying and Strobel, you know, just about these chance meetings. You have a chance to do that every single day. What a privilege that we have to be able to do that for God. It's awesome. So it's not just an event. And we see this in the life of Jesus in the Gospels, don't we? Every Gospel has many examples of it, but I love Mark chapter 5. Great story. He's on a boat. He had just calmed the seas. He goes on a boat to get over to Gerasene. And as soon as he gets off the boat, the Gerasene demoniac comes up and starts messing with him. And he has to deal with that. And he heals him. And as soon as that happens, Jairus comes up, the Jewish official. And he's like, "You got to come. You got to come and heal my daughter. She's dying." Okay, let's go. Let's show the way. So, you know, they're on the way to go and heal his daughter. And then the woman with a hemorrhage comes up and is like, "Oh my gosh," you know, she touches his robe and she gets healed. And there's this big commotion about it. Nonstop interruption the whole time. And it's like this throughout the Gospels. You'll see it quite a bit. And the thing about it was that he never looked at it as an interruption. He was ready every single time to meet, to interact with these people. I love, I kind of was reading this book. It's by a guy named David Stevens. He is an MD himself, and he wrote a book about, it's called Jesus, MD, A Doctor Examines the Great Physician. And in this one chapter, it's called Jesus, the chapter is called The Great Physician Didn't Require an Appointment. So he's just studying the life of Jesus. And this is called Jesus Interrupted. He says, in Matthew 20, Jesus is traveling from Jericho to Jerusalem when two blind men kept calling out, trying to get his attention. The crowd keeps saying to them, "Be quiet, don't bother the teacher, he's too busy. He has many things to do." But in verse 32, Jesus stopped and called them. "What do you want me to do for you?" And of course, he says, the physician already had his day scheduled. Thousands of people were waiting for him. It was Palm Sunday, you know, a big day for Jesus. You know, lots of prophecies to fulfill. He had only 1 week left with his disciples. So much to do and so little time. And yet he stops. He doesn't view them as a bothersome speed bump. That's what he calls these interruptions, speed bumps. He doesn't merely slow down and wave. He could have. He could have healed them right from where he was, but he doesn't. He stops, he turns his attention from the road ahead and refocuses on these men and their need. Total focus on what was going on with each person. It's amazing. It's a great picture of hospitality. This is a good example for us. And so, you know, I think about stories like, you know, the fact that there was a call to Xenos to use, that some people needed help, some refugees from the boot, from Nepali. And Danny Walker took a blankets and a pillow or something very simple, you know, got interrupted in his day too, I'm sure. Took blankets and a pillow to a family. And from one act of that, we have a huge Nepali ministry going on in this church. From one act, from one interruption of my day. Isn't that amazing when you think about it? It's a great story. I'm sure I'm not giving it as good credence as it as you should. Some of you probably know the story too. But, you know, that's okay to be interrupted in your day to do something like that and focus the attention on that person and their need. So, readiness. Let's see. Okay, go back. All right, so the second part of our definition is warmly. It may seem obvious, yes, we should be warm when we show hospitality, but honestly, because of those interruptions, do we not sometimes struggle to be a little warm, you know, with those interruptions, with people coming and having a need, or they need a place to stay, or they need, you know, they need a little bit of help, they need a meal, whatever it is. And, you know, we can tend to have that, ugh, my agenda is being stopped. Forward progress in what I was doing is being stopped. So, you know, this is where I kind of have a little play on words. I say we need to take the spit out of hospitality and do it in a warm fashion. I love how the NIV says in First Peter 4:9 where the command is, you know, to show hospitality. But the NIV says, cheerfully show hospitality, you know, knowing that you were once a stranger too. And so I just thought for a minute, let's just talk about what are some of the things we grumble about when it comes to hospitality. What are some of the things that we, kind of throw out like, gosh, if only this didn't happen today, la la la. What do we struggle with? Yeah.
The struggle to get other people on board sometimes. Like, I've got a lot of roommates in the house that's really messy, so we have people over, and it's like, oh man, it's like taking 2 hours.
Okay.
Getting frustrated.
Awesome. Excellent. That's good. Getting kind of spreading that vision. Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Valid point. I like that. So maybe, you know, it's cutting in a little too much to my agenda. Okay, good. That's excellent. What else? I know you guys have them. Yeah. That's right. Inconvenient. Good. Yeah. Oh, good one. Mm-hmm. Messy. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Okay. You are cut off. Good. Excellent. Very good. Yeah. What are we going to talk about? Oh, yeah, that's good. I totally understand that one. Yeah. Yeah.
I get stuck on like people's attitudes. Like, if they're like, they don't want to like be on the board, that's like, not very nice. So, like,
you have an uncle. Okay.
Right now, they're like,
oh, good.
I love you.
Okay, excellent. Putting up with people's idiosyncrasies. Yeah, good. Yep, that's one more.
I wonder if I show hospitality to people too often.
Okay, that's good. That's really good. Hopefully we're going to hit some of these and at the end part of our discussion here. But those are all excellent grumblings that we have about hospitality. So good. You guys are on it. I love it. All right, so that's that warmly part of our definition. How about compassion? Obviously, this kind of goes hand in hand too, but compassion implies that it's an external action based on an internal emotion. Something internal has moved us to compassion. And that word compassion in the Greek, it literally talks about, you know, it's being moved in your inward parts. In fact, bowels is the word that is often associated with, because back then That was the seat of emotion, was your bowels. And you know that feeling too, don't you? When you're moved, I mean, you feel it inside. It's a very powerful emotion, internal, but it pours itself out externally in action. And that's what compassion is. Again, we see this in Jesus all throughout the Gospels. We see him, the Gospel writers say he was moved to compassion. And every single time he is, sometimes he weeps, right? But every single time he's moved that way, it has its result in an external thing, an action. He heals them, or he forgives them, or he invites them, you know, to dinner, or to hang out, or to follow him. He's moved, and it has an outward expression. That's what compassion is. You guys know this. I mean, and you know when you've experienced it too, because it's not something you can fake. It's genuine. It's real, and it speaks to your heart. So biblical hospitality has to have that component in it. It is not fake. It is real. And I think here's a warning I want to just kind of put out to you guys, because it speaks, I'm saying this to myself. Don't suppress that compassion that you feel. I know you feel it. I have felt it. There's that, oh, you know, I want to do something. And then what happens? You write it off. You know, you fear takes over or whatever, and you suppress that. Don't suppress it. Let it have its fullest result. Let God be a part of that. Move you to action, right? I mean, I know you guys know what this feels like, because I feel it a lot. And I'm speaking to myself. All right, so the last part is a stranger, all right? Stranger, literally in the Bible, meant sojourner or a foreigner. And so in light of the Old Testament, talking about a foreigner or a sojourner, you know, these were people that were traveling from city to city. There wasn't a Hampton Inn along the way. There was, you know, a lot of times there was no places to stay. It was just a road that was made in between two big cities, nothing else. And so when there were people, you know, in nearby, or just people, even Bedouins, you know, kind of migrating around, if somebody came by, you offered them a place to stay, to spend the night. You gave them your food. You got the best food and you served it to them. This was like an ethic, not just in Judaism, in the Middle East. It's an ethic that you invite the stranger in, you honor him with hospitality. So it's a big thing, like I said, in the Old Testament. Here today, you know, the stranger is, we have the international students, and this is where, listen to Rich Mandola's breakout session, because he has this down. He gets that the international student that comes here, they're terrified. They don't, you know, they have no resources. They barely speak the language. They need help. They need help getting a place to stay, getting a car, you know, everything, paying bills. And that's where we can, you know, extend our hospitality to them. And I Middleburg said it last night, I think, but, you know, the stats on how international students, when they come here, how few of them get to be invited into an American household, that's a shame. That is a shame for us. You know, we need to be inviting them. They love to come into our homes. They really get excited about it. So you have that. You have the refugees, like we talked about, the Nepali, the Somalia community. But a stranger, ironically, can be right next door to you. And I know this is true for me. Bill Hybels, you guys have you ever heard of his Walk Across the Room DVD series? How many of you listened to that? Oh, good, good. If you haven't, you need to. My women's group, you know, our home church is struggling in evangelism, and my women's group decided to do this together. It's a DVD, interactive kind of DVD series where you actually do some homework, and you do some study before the next session. And one of the homework assignments was to list five of your neighbors, list their names of their children, what they did for a living, and had they ever been in your home? I was shocked at the results. Our whole women's group was shocked at the results. I was so humbled by this. It made me really convicted. And, you know, here I am. I'm realizing that I've been in this neighborhood for, it's going on 17 years. And there's neighbors that I've never walked across the street and introduced myself or said hello to or invited them over for coffee. I have a neighbor across the street from me, and, you know, we know each other. We, you know, hello, we've seen each other at neighborhood events and things like that. And I really did kind of just write her off and just kind of say, well, you know, they're too busy. They don't have time. And after this DVD series, I'm like, oh my gosh, I have never invited her over. I've never done anything with her. So I called her up. I asked her if she wanted to go to lunch. She said yes, which was shocking enough. And then I find out through this lunch how her marriage is in shambles. She's desperate. She is waiting for her kids to graduate so she can leave her husband. That's right across the street from me. And I had no idea, no idea that she was struggling that way. And I'm like, oh gosh, I've been praying for her ever since. We have very different views spiritually. She has basically told me that she does not want to hear about Jesus, but I still pray for her. We still go to lunch. And, you know, I throw things out there every once in a while. I'm just going to keep the door open, really. Because, I mean, she's desperate. She's desperate. It's very sad. So, you know, how about your neighbors? You know, how well do you know your neighbors? Have you invited them over? So just something to think about. All right, so that was our definition. I want to add three essential points. I don't know if I put these on your handout. I think maybe I did. I did, good. I wanted to call them requirements, but I thought, you know, this should be for everything. I mean, these three points apply to everything about us as believers and followers of Christ. The first one is that in order to do biblical hospitality, we need to recognize that all men and women are created in God's image. And one of the speakers alluded to this the other night. I mean, it's just a given, but it's so true. What does that mean to be made in God's image? It means you have inherent value. We're all made in God's image, right? You have inherent worth. You are worth being known, right? And so every stranger that we meet is worth being known, is worth something. If they're worth something huge to God, then they should be worth something huge to us, right? And I love this point because this is kind of like where God's really changed my heart in this area, because for so long, I didn't want anything to do with people. I really wanted to be alone by myself on a mountain with my horse protecting wildlife. That was my life dream, really. And I never thought I would be doing anything like this. So, you know, God has changed my heart here, and I think it's because, you know, I got this point. I was worth something to God. I'm worth being known. So are you, you know? And Bill Hybels is great on this because he has this thing. He says, what's your story? And then the whole point is everyone has a story. Everyone has a story. Even the people that scare the bejeebies out of you has a story worth listening to. Get to know their story. And that helps you with understanding that they are God's child too. Right? So I love that point. Proverbs 25, verses 21 through 22 says to even your enemy is worth showing hospitality to. He says, how does he say it? I wrote it down here. If your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he's thirsty, give him water. For you will heap burning coals of fire on his head, and the Lord will reward you. You know, a lot of people think this burning coals thing is a judgment thing. But I kind of believe some other scholars when they say that's that that point of realization that I'm in sin and I'm convicted. And it's this point of change where when you show hospitality to someone who's even, you know, your neighbor who you've been fighting with, whatever, you know, that melts them. It makes them more receptive to God, to the gospel. It breaks down the barriers. It helps people repent. So, you know, that's just a little plug. We all have them. We all have people, you know, that, oh, I don't know if I could do that with. Yes, you can. You can. Second point, hospitality and spiritual profiling are mutually exclusive. Who's heard of spiritual profiling? Kind of, I don't know if it's even a real word, but to spiritually profile means you're sizing someone up. You're looking at them and you're saying, you know, you're a little too different for me. You're a little scary. You don't have the same political beliefs I have, or you're in a different socioeconomic bracket. You live on this side of town, blah, blah, blah. And you are sizing them up to see if they are worth your time or your hospitality, or are you worth inviting into my Christian community? You're just too different. You're just too this, too that, whatever it is. That's spiritually profiling. And there is no room in biblical hospitality for that at all. Just saying. I struggle with this. I do. And I had a friend call me out on it. And it has been great for me. I have to go to task with the Lord on this a lot. You know, I mean, there's people even in my neighborhood that I spiritually profile. It's wrong. Don't do it. Get away. Flee. Flee. So that's that. The third point here, essential truth about hospitality, is that it demands that we have a loose grip on this world and the things in it. Again, these are maxims that go for any part of our Christian life, but especially for hospitality. Having a loose grip on this world. So, you know, you have a house, you have a car, you have things, you use your gasoline, your money, and it's not yours. None of it is yours. Do you realize that? You are a steward of everything that God has given you. The earth is the Lord's and all it contains, the world and those who dwell in it. Proverbs 24. Your house is not your house. It is to be used by God for His glory. So having that perspective really changes the way you view your stuff, doesn't it? So, you know, I have a Bible study that meets in my house every week. I got 20 to 25 people come into my house every week. My carpet is a mess. Yeah, there's spills on it. Some things have been broken. You know, we've had to do some repairs here and there. But it's not my house. It's God's. And it's being used for something great, to give Him glory, not for me, to give me glory. You know, your gas that you spend to go across town to pick somebody up, that's not your gas. God gave you the ability to have that gas. So, you know, when you think about your stuff being used, it's going to get broken, it's going to not be great anymore, have a loose grip. God has control of those things. Those are God's things that He has made you a steward of to be used for Him in the grand plan of reaching people for God. So, three maxims there. All right. So, let's move on. I got a couple more points here. Why is hospitality essential for evangelism? I mean, we've kind of already talked about this, but I think these points are worth really repeating. It is at the heart of adorning the gospel. That's what hospitality does. It adorns the gospel. What does it mean to adorn? It means that you are drawing attention to something else. When you adorn things, you make it pretty. You know, you add a little glitz to bring the eye to it. That's what hospitality does for the gospel. I know it's kind of an old example, but it's really effective. A picture frame, the purpose of a picture frame is to draw your eye to the artwork, to the artist's work. if the picture frame is cooler than the artist's work, then the eye never goes to appreciate what has been done. And so, same thing with hospitality. It should draw our attention to the work of Christ, to the gospel, to what Jesus has done for us. Again, the focus is on Jesus, not on us. It's not about us. I think a lot of us try to be the picture frame. I know I do. You know, I'll meet people, and I'm kind of nervous. I want to talk to them about the Lord. And so I got to say things like, well, you know, we're a really great group of people. We're fun. We have a lot of fun together. And I want you to know that because we're normal. And so you can come and see and be like, you can be like me, you know. Isn't that what we're saying? And that's just not the way it should be. And I'm not saying it's not good to dispel misconceptions or to show people that we can have fun, but it's not about us. The focus then becomes on us again. And instead, it needs to be where it should be, on Jesus. So, when we practice that goal hospitality, our neighbors, through the compassion that they see in us, they actually have an encounter with Jesus Christ himself. This is still under adorning the gospel. I love this, and I'm so glad Julie's here, because I wanted to share this story about many years ago when a bunch of us, well, there was a gal and a couple in our home church that was reaching out to this couple. And they didn't know a lot of people. You know, they had moved up north when no one lived there, so there was, you know, just not a lot of people up there. And they were moving, and they needed help moving. And so my friend says, well, we'll help you. My Bible study will come and help you move. And so we got trucks, we got some vans, you know, we pour over to the Humphreys' house and load stuff in the cars and trucks and take it to the new location, and we're unpacking and everything, and there's this barn in their new location, a little shed. And in the shed, I don't even know if you remember this, Julie, in the shed were these two banquet chairs. And I'm looking at these chairs, and I'm like, wow, these are exactly like our home church chairs in the basement. I'll take these off your hand. What do you want for them? And John says, no, you just take those chairs. You put them in the basement. That's me and my wife's chair. We're going to come to your Bible study. And that, I mean, now because he saw what he saw, we were adorning the gospel through serving them this way. What do they say about moving? You know, who wants to move somebody, right? You know who your friends are when they come and help you move. And that just spoke volumes to him. And that's just how they became part of our home church. It's really awesome. So Matthew 25, I just have to mention this one because I love this story. It's the story where he's talking to his disciples and he says, I was hungry, you fed me, I was thirsty, you gave me a drink, I was in prison and you came to visit me. And they say, well, when did we do that, Lord? And he says, when you did this to any of these, and he's speaking to the lost, the people around me, you did it to me. And that's that part that Jesus so identifies with the lost around us, with our lost neighbors, that when we interact with him and we show that compassion, they're interacting with Jesus himself. That's how much he identifies with their need and the way that we can connect to meet that need. That is really cool. And the second point here under this is that our hospitality can mimic the greatest act of hospitality that there ever was, and that's the incarnation of Christ. Jesus left the comfort, the perfect environment of his heavenly Father and love relationship with him to come down here to a messed up world to be uncomfortable and to make us his friends. That is hospitality. That's the gospel, the greatest act of hospitality. He would be the one to initiate, you know, with that neighbor that everybody gossips about. He's the one who goes to the different people, right? That's what he did. He went to the messed up of society when he came down here. And so, you know, what about you? You know, are you willing to leave behind your comfort and go to a place that's a little uncomfortable and meet people this way? Meet them where they're at. you were different to Jesus. You were the stranger. I love in Ephesians 2 how Paul says, you know, you were a child of wrath. You were without God and without hope in this world. And he broke that barrier down and made us his friends. That's awesome. That is totally the gospel. And so, you know, when people ask us to explain our behavior, you know, then we have the chance to say, the only reason I'm doing this is because Jesus did this with me, right? I was shown compassion, and that's why I'm doing this. There was a gal, I work retail, and I never thought I would ever do that, but I do, and I like it a lot because I like people, and I like meeting people now. And I love being when I'm on the floor at work because I get to interact with customers, and that's I just love that. Well, one day this woman comes in, an elderly lady, and she was interested in some flatware, whatever, and found out through this discussion I was having with her about it and the pricing that she wasn't going to get her way. She was, it's a long story, but she was upset that she wasn't going to be able to get the price that she thought. And it had to do with, you know, just some logistical things. But she unloaded on me. She berated me. She kind of had a big snit, basically. And it was embarrassing. And it was in front of a lot of other customers and my coworkers. And I just kind of, you know, took it, and then we tried to make it right. We tried to, you know, help her out as best she could, but she stomped out of the store just in a mess and tizzy. And everybody's just kind of like, what was that? You know, and they're looking at me and they're like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fine. No, I'm good. I'm like, but I'm going to pray for her. And I said that to my coworkers. Like, I'm going to pray right now that she will come back and apologize, because it was just so off the top crazy reaction. And I know that in her heart that she was going to be struggling with that, you know, that she was going to feel bad about that, and there was going to be this thing just hanging over, and I didn't want her to feel like that. So I prayed for her, and a couple days later I come out from the back stock room, and there she is, and she's talking to my manager. And she points the finger at me, and she goes, that's the one. And I'm like, oh, God, this is not what I prayed for, you know. So what's going to happen? And I walk over, and she looked at me, and she said, I was horrible to you. I treated you so badly, and you were so kind to me. She's like, you didn't deserve the way I treated you, and you were so kind. And she looked at me dead in the eye, and she said, why were you so nice to me? And I told her why. I said, we all have days like that. You know, I have days like that. And I'm like, God shows me compassion when I have days like that. Why would I not show you compassion when you have a day like that? And she just melted. It was great. It was like awesome. And my coworkers are watching this too. And this is the thing, is that you are being watched every day. You are being watched in your interactions, in how you talk with people, in your how you talk when they're not there. You are being watched by the world around us. And that's, Jesus has a chance to show himself through our interactions that way. That's you know, we give credit to God when we can treat people this way. It's because we've been shown mercy. Okay, so we know it's been commanded. We know how effective it can be. So literally, why don't we do this? We talked a little bit about that. Why do we struggle in this area? Well, I'm going to contend that it's because we are underutilizing the gospel. Okay, so you guys have a little chart, I think, on your paper. This is from Mike Bullmore. Have you guys heard of him? He actually was here at SSI a couple years back, wasn't he? And he has this thing called the functional centrality of the gospel, which is a big technical word. I kind of think of it as the outworking of the gospel in our lives. The gospel is not just for non-believers. The gospel is for us. In fact, Paul tells us in Colossians 1 that it is to constantly bear fruit in our lives, right? So the gospel, we need to be nourished by the gospel every day as believers and followers of Christ. And this little, I think I even have it up here. Oh, look at that. Not even using my PowerPoint. So in the center is the pure gospel, the fact that Jesus came down, entered into our world, took the penalty of death on himself to remove the barrier of sin between him and us so that we could have a life forever with him and be forgiven forever. That's the gospel, right? We all know that. But then that outward circle, the one after that, is gospel truths. I also like to call them gospel implications. So because of the gospel, there are many, many gospel implications or gospel truths. The New Testament is full of them. You see them everywhere in the New Testament. Things like, I am adopted by God. I am his daughter. That is a gospel implication. It's implied from the gospel. I am holy and blameless. That's how God sees me. That is a gospel implication, a gospel truth. And so my contention is that anytime we're struggling with hospitality, it's because we are missing this gospel truth. We're not applying that gospel truth in our lives somewhere. And so that's where, you know, this is where we go back to what we struggled with, what we grumble about. Let's talk about that for a little bit. I'm not gifted. I think I have the first one there, right? Well, I'm going to say, you know, we'll say that. I'm not gifted. But what are we really saying when we say that? And Middleburg just talked about this. He says, God didn't make me that way. So that's what we're really saying when we say I'm not gifted. God made me wrong. You know, he screwed up. That's what we're really saying. So what would be a gospel truth that speaks to this unbelief, to this issue? You guys have any ideas? Have any thoughts? There's probably many. I have one, but I figure you guys might have some. Anybody? Good. Yeah. Excellent. He doesn't make mistakes. Yeah. Very good. I like that. Blessed with every spiritual blessing. Good. Great. Great gospel truth. Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Have not been given a spirit of timidity. Good. I had for me, because this is one, I love this verse. It's on my Bible because I need it every day. And it's Ephesians 2:10, that we are God's masterpiece. We've been created by God to do good works, right? That's how we were created. Again, God doesn't make mistakes. We're all called to show hospitality. You're his masterpiece in order to do that. That's a gospel implication. And so the help here is that you get to apply this truth when you are feeling that apprehension. I'm not gifted. Well, no. Look at this. I have this biblical truth that tells me I can do this. And so you chew on that. You meditate on it. You pray about it. You go over and over again when you're confronted with that thought. Then I'm not gifted. How about I'm too busy? What are we really saying when we say, oh, I'm too busy? I think, because I'm speaking for myself, it's not a priority, okay? Hospitality in this situation, it's not a priority. I mean, maybe you say something different. I'm just telling you my examples here. I'm just going to have full disclosure. So a gospel implication for me when I hear that, I go to 1 Peter 2:9, and Middleburg used this morning as well. I love this verse. It's like a creed for me. I need it. It's the one that he says, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a people of God's own possession, so that you, my masterpiece, my chosen people, can proclaim the excellencies of him, God, who's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. That's your job. That's why you were created, to proclaim His excellencies. So to say it's not a priority, we're saying I'm not in line with the way God created me. I need to adopt God's priorities for me based on what He's done for you. Remember, He bought you with a price, right? He owns you because of His blood. So yeah, adopt His priorities for you. You are His chosen people, the chosen vehicle to do this. Do you guys have any other thoughts? Any other verses come to mind with that one? You can build a whole, toolbox of verses that will speak to that. Yes, go ahead.
It's not really a verse, but I guess it's a thought that I spend a lot of busyness.
Okay.
Wanting to get so much done during the day to generate the people's time. Once ago, I read a book called Martin, and it was one line that said, sometimes the matter of getting less done is getting pregnant.
Oh, very good. Now, that's excellent.
That yes, one was getting very necessary stuff done, but Lord clearly pointed out the better thing to write.
That's right.
And let the other people
know. Awesome. Yep, whatever it takes to get you back on track. That's great. That's perfect. I love how Luther says, this is also the same thing. It's not a verse, but it's a quote from Luther. He's like, I have so many things to do this morning. If I don't spend 4 hours in prayer, I'm going to be screwed. I mean, basically is what he's saying. And here's a busy guy, and yet he dedicates himself to God's priorities. Yeah. Yeah. Can you speak up a tad? Okay, yeah. That's right. That's great. That's an excellent. Where is that? Do you know? Yeah, see, I'm bad at that too. He will lead you in the way of everlasting. That's good. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Ooh. That's a really good one. I need to write that one down. I'll get it later. I'll get it from you later. Good. Excellent. Yes. Excellent. I was thinking of that one too. This is the food. Excellent. Right. Awesome. Great. You guys are good. You also kind of reminded me of delight in the Lord and He'll give you the desires of your heart. You know, when you make God's priorities, your desires change. You know, when you are in touch with the gospel on a day-to-day basis, your desires change and they become more in line with God's desires. So that's awesome. You guys are great. All right, how about meeting new people scares me. Scary, it's so scary. And this is me. I mean, this is why I wanted to be on a mountain by myself. So what am I really saying when I say that? What I'm really saying, maybe you guys are different, but I'm saying, what will they think about me? I'm worried about what they'll think about me. Okay? So to that, I have to go to things like 1 Thessalonians 2. I've been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so I speak not as pleasing men, but as pleasing God who examines my heart. It's not about what people think about me. Again, it's not about me or my stuff. It's about God. It's about reflecting Him to people. You guys struggle with that one? I do. The next one is just like it. My house is messy, right? My house is always messy. And if I didn't have home group in my house, it would never get clean. So, some people stop by and they're like, oh, wow. You know, it's not a home group night. And they stop by, okay, it's good to see that your house is dirty too. Like, yes, it is. And so that same principle, just like, what will they think of me? What will they think of my house? What will they think of me? You know, they're going to judge me. Same kind of answers to that. This one I love because it's another one that came up earlier. People are messy. People are messy. You are messy, you know? We're all messy, aren't we? What are we really saying when we say that? I'm going to ask you guys to see what you say, because I have an idea. What are we really saying when we say people are messy? Okay, good. That's excellent. I care more about my house than people coming in, because they might, you know, make it messy. Good. That's a great one. The emotional sponge. Yes. Good. That's me. Yes. Oh, good. Yes. I might get taken advantage of. I might get hurt. Yeah. Yeah, it's incongruent, isn't it? Yes. Good. Good. Yeah, for me, I kind of say, this is what I'm really saying, is I want to live in my bubble world. I want to live in my happy little Christian bubble world and not be disrupted and not have the police knock on my door at 3 a.m, which has happened. You know, not have to, you know, invest in people that are really needy and have to spend some hours on the phone with. I mean, people are messy, and I want my comfort. Okay, that's a valid point. That's a great point. So yeah, you need to be smart. That's right. And you don't want to be abused and used. You want to be smart about it, but you can't let that be your. Okay. Okay. Right. That's good. Okay. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying. And that's a really great plug for the support of the body of Christ, to be doing this with each other and keeping each other accountable. And yes, I agree totally. Yeah. But for me, you know, the biggest, I'm a comfort gal. I love my comfort. I want placidness. I want harmony. And very rarely does that happen in the Christian life. It just doesn't. So, good. And so my verse for that one is 2 Corinthians 5:20. You know, we're Christ's ambassadors. I mean, this is a verse that has come up over and over and over again. You know, God is entreating through us to the messy people, to the people that scare us, to the neighbor that we're afraid of. I mean, we are that chance for them. We're his ambassadors. You guys have any other thoughts on that? Those verses or anything? Okay, good. So here's the last one I think I have on there. It costs too much. You know, there's a family member that needs to stay with you for a while. Somebody was just mentioning that up here. You know, that's happened many times. I've had family members that need a place to stay. Yeah, it's more food I got to buy. You know, I got to cart them around. You know, that's gas money. It costs a lot. So what are we really saying when we say this? They're not worth it. And what? Good. Yeah. Excellent. That's the one I went to. It's basically, you know, what about my needs? It's my money. Again, is it really? Yeah. Yeah. Who's going to take care of me? That's what I'm really saying when I have this objection. And that's where I go to Philippians 4:19, where, you know, Paul says, my God will supply all of your needs. He will richly bless you. You know, yeah, we don't want to go bankrupt, and don't be irresponsible, but don't use it as an excuse not to be generous with your stuff, with your money. So, okay, well, that's pretty much all I have. I do have a little bit of a homework assignment for you. So when you, there's probably more apprehensions than I listed here. I bet you have some yourself. In fact, my friend Margaret gave me one that I wish I would have put up there. She said, and this is great, I never even thought of it. She said, I'm worried that I'll be embarrassed by my children's behavior. I'm like, yeah, that's a good one. I hadn't thought about that one. But, you know, that's a valid apprehension. So I want you guys to work on this. First, identify the apprehension that you have in walking across the street to meeting your neighbor, in showing hospitality, in, you know, bringing a blanket to somebody, in having them in your house for a meal. You know, what's your apprehension? Identify it. Then apply that specific gospel truth. And this is, you don't just do this once, guys. You gotta rehash it in your mind, in your heart, in prayer. Ask God to help you apply that biblical truth in your heart so that you can move past this apprehension. And then pray. You know, God, I know right now, has people in your minds that you're thinking of. And He's placed that person in your mind for a reason. Ask God to, and maybe He doesn't right now, pray that He reveals to you who you want, who He wants you to show compassion to, hospitality to. Pray that He would reveal that. And, you know, pray that He'll open that door for you to do it, and that you would walk through it, that you would have the actual confidence that God's given you to walk through that door. And then act in faith. Do it. That compassion, again, moves us to act. Do it in faith. Initiate is the way I say it. I just wanted to make another plug before we close, and that is if you have nobody, Dennis was saying last night, we have nobody on my list. I don't have anybody to think of to show hospitality to. I'm going to make a plug for something called meetup. .com? .com. So, and it's not a singles hookup thing. But Sherry Fojas and I, 4 years ago, started this. It's a social networking thing, but it's what you do is you go to the website, you plug in your zip code, and you get shown all these groups that are meeting around you. So there's, you know, hiking groups and biking groups and, you know, needlepoint. What's that? Cooking groups. I mean, there's a group for just about anything. If you want to collect bugs, there's probably a group for bug collecting. And you can meet these people. And I know we've been doing it monthly for 4 years. And we have developed great friendships with these people. Some of them have come to events, you know, Christian events. I'm actually having lunch with Mary Monday, dinner. And so, and I got to tell you, every single time, God comes up. We do one called Conversation and Cuisine. So we go to a different restaurant every year or every month, and we have a topic, and we talk about it. And every single time, God comes up. People do want to talk about spiritual things. So it's a great tool, really good tool. So, that's what I got. Yes.
I just wanted to throw in a verse that I really.
Oh, good.
And it's talking about like when you initiated with like showing the hospitality to others because God showed the hospitality to us.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I really love, not just in the area of hospitality, but just in my life in general, is the first couple verses of Psalm 40, and it says, "I waited patiently for the Lord, and He turned and." Hear to me and heard my cries, and you say with your neighbor, like you had no idea.
Right.
She was like begging for his help, and
mm-hmm.
It says, "He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand." I love that verse in and of itself, but I think it's really beautiful here too. With like, there are people in our lives that like they are like begging for somewhere to stand.
That's right.
And God wants to give them. Someplace
yep.
to stand, and the Holy Spirit wants to use us to do that.
That's right. Oh, I love that. We're the friend at midnight. You know, we're that go-between where we can help meet that need. Absolutely. I love Psalms 40. It's a good one. All right.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.